For the vast majority of classical music lovers, Latin American Baroque composers are kind of unknown, really. Would you say that? Certainly
yes,
true
yes.
In my case.
Partly because a lot of the music's been hidden in dusty cathedral libraries for years and years and years, and it's just all coming to light, or certainly in the last 20 years or so.
But do you go in Echo, do you play some of this music?
Well,
I mean, have you played
more
it
about
in the past?
It. I mean, it turns out, what's really interesting is that it turns out that, you know, as part of the Spanish sort of conquistador expedition, of course, all the Jesuits took their music, the European sacred music, with them as part of their sort of propaganda to help convert the local population. But they had to blend it with all the local dance rhythms to actually make it fun, you know, much more fun and dancey to listen to. So you hear music that was similar to the sort of sacred Renaissance church music, but it's mixed with these rhythms that we now call like La Bamba and these things that were part of the local tradition. So you get this big melting pot, really poppy.
So it was a kind of a colonization tool, was it?
Yeah, it was a huge propaganda effect, but, you know, basically by these sort of Jesuit missionary people who wanted to convert as many people as they could to the Catholic faith, and music was a big sort of propaganda tool, and they used it, and it was really effective. Of course, it's a really effective thing. You know, art, architecture, music was really deployed as a kind of shock and awe, you know, cultural weapons, really. So but it wouldn't have survived if they hadn't melded it with a local tradition. So you get this sort of really funky music that you would never expect to be, you know, this sort of sacred music. It's all very holy, but actually some of it, it's got amazing dance rhythms.
But with Rachel, with a bit of African thrown in and yes, the South American, pre-Hispanic.
Yes, a real fusion. So you've got lots of music written for double choir, antiphonal singing, as you would in Spain or in Italy at that time. The same thing happening over there, but as Gawain says, all these different rhythms going on, and I know we start on one page and we think, oh, this is all very familiar, and then you turn the page and all of a sudden it's all gone slightly wacky, which is it's fab. It's really good
fun. Impossible not to do toe tapping if you come to the concert on the 16th of March
in the Abbey.
Definitely.
Does the fact that you turn the page, as you say, and then there's something quite different, does that make it a bit of a challenge for the choir?
Yeah, it is a challenge. I mean, we've done some of it before, but it's maybe 12 years ago, something like that. So some people have done it before, quite a lot haven't done it before. And it's not, because a lot of the languages are very unfamiliar as well. You don't retain it in the way that you might retain Bach, for example.
You mean because it's in Aztec and not Latin?
Yes. So yeah, it's been a challenge, but really enjoyable. The choir's really enjoyed it, and actually it was people in the choir who remember doing it the last time and wanted to do a similar programme again when we were discussing what we might do in the next couple of years. So
yeah, you have to approach all this music as a performer with a lot of free spirit, and you can't be too uptight. You've just got to go for it.
Yeah. You mean you can't be typically British about
no,
it?
Exactly. No British upper no, lip yeah, about yeah. this.
So you've got to really be, just let it all hang out.
Yeah.
Now, I assume, Gawain, that the instruments that you play and will be playing in the Abbey on 16th of March are the sort of instruments that would have been contemporaneous.
Yeah. Absolutely. The inverted commas, classical instruments of the 16th and 17th centuries that were played in Spain and Portugal and Italy were taken out by the Jesuits. And there were some of Spain's best musicians went out to perform and teach. And, of course, they passed these traditions on to the local population. So it wasn't long, before you had people from the local cultures playing these, you know, cornetto and trombone and shawm and organs. I mean, they built the most fabulous organs in these sort of, Bolivian, Guatemalan, Mexican towns. I mean, it's amazing, and there are lots of them are still there.
In the churches,
untouched. Mm. Yeah, I mean, they're untouched because they've been spared dramatic restoration because they've just been left alone. So actually, you know, lots of historical organs in Europe have been messed about with. They've been altered, tinkered, and sort of constantly changed.
In the days before we really
knew
how
to do it.
Yeah,
like in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they've been constantly evolving. And you can walk into some Mexican church or some sort of Bolivian church in a town in a town in the jungle and find this pristine, you know, maybe slightly not in the best working order, but this unaltered document of what amazing musical sounds must have been coming out.
Not full of
churches.
Cockroaches and spiders and
exactly what, yeah.
Dust. Have you ever played any of them?
No,
yourself?
I'd absolutely love to make a trip. I mean, there's so much out there. Yeah. And there's all these sort of archives in these monasteries and convents and sort of Jesuit missions and things. There's lots of things out there still to be discovered. So the music on the 16th of March in the Abbey, you'll be hearing just the tip of the iceberg, really.
So Rachel, this really was early fusion music then, wasn't it?
I think so, yes.
And how much do you think those colonising Spanish composers would have been influenced in their subsequent work by the music that they had deliberately, absorbed as a means of, as a colonisation tool?
I very much so, I think. I mean the Spanish composers who went out there mostly stayed. As far as we can tell, so I assume either they liked it there, or they never got the chance to come home. I'm not sure, but then you start getting a tradition of composers who moved out, possibly in fairly old age, out to the New Americas, and then were passing that tradition down to composers who were born out there as well. So it became their tradition as well.
So do you think there's going to be a sort of a resurgence of this music, this particular legacy from
Definitely.
South America?
I mean, it's really attractive music. And of course, what'll be interesting, to happen at the moment, we've got, maybe in 20, 30 years' time, we'll be having ensembles from that part of the world doing their own music, which would be really interesting to see. It'll be like the next thing to do,
One of the things I wondered was whether there was any, before the Spanish composers went out taking, obviously, our music notation with them, did the native, the original civilizations have any form of written music, do you know?
Not that I'm aware of, but it's way off my field, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm afraid mine too. But I suspect probably
notated
not
music.
A lot.
Notated music could be quite a. It would have to be connected to a real sort of, literary tradition and stuff. And of course, they had their own traditions, but I'm not aware of it. But I've got many.
Because I suppose
black holes in my knowledge, and that's one of them.
We'll go away and find out.
Tell you next week. Come and find out on the 16th, and we'll have time to read up about it.
We'll rush off and do your homework. Because I suppose actually it had only been, what was it, in the 1300s or so that we started writing down music on a the stave, on the lines, on a sheet, and it didn't look anything like the kind of these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a bit of a tricky subject if you say what was musical notation, because originally musical notation in our European cultures came into life really as like an aide memoir. So how to jot down a tune you already knew in a way that would help you just sort of jog your memory. So it wasn't like composing it in the way we would think of it. It's just to sort of jog your memory as you... were revisiting a piece that you hadn't sung for a year.
So these composers, some of whose works you will be performing on 16th in the Abbey, they would have been having to do it all by ear, wouldn't they? They'd have had to
The Jesuits brought their musical education system with them.
So no, but I mean, if they would have,
if they were
because
picking
they
up the local music,
picking up the local music
yeah,
to incorporate.
Yeah, I imagine yeah, so. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and then transferring it to our Western notation.
Yeah,
marvelous.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult. It was interesting times. I mean, lots of the Spanish, lots of the Spanish composers stayed, but of course, some of them, their life was difficult, and it was really on the frontier. They were hacking paths through sort of jungle rainforest things, and some of these musicians didn't last long. I mean, there was one band of instrumentalists, similar to what you'll be hearing. They got lost in the jungle, ran out of food, and they had to decide which musicians to eat.
Ooh.
So they ate the shawl players first.
Oh no! I trust you. You don't do anything like that in Echo.
Sign of the respect to the shawl players were held in. But no, it was really frontier territory.
Yeah.
So it was.
And coping with disease.
Absolutely. Yes.
And,
yes.
All the rest of it. Yes, real pioneers. How exciting! Yes. So anyway, I think we'll have another a piece of music. This one is called I Andar Andar. I can work that one out because that's Spanish, isn't
Lots
it?
Lots of roll dars. Yes, very good.
Andar. So thank you very much, Rachel Greaves and Gawain Denton, for coming in. And your concert will be 7:30 p.m.
That's right.
Saturday the 16th of March in Sherborne Abbey.
That's right.